They're up sharply.
All right.
Things up around.
And yep. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 240 for September 30th, 2019. We are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And today we will be discussing the 314th weekly report. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at this yet, just go to timingresearch.com/reports. And you can get access to either the web or PDF version there. Just a reminder, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast network, and to get immediate updates on future shows. And today, Mark Sachs was supposed to join us, but he had something come up, so we're going to get him on again on another future show. But I have Jake Bernstein and Jim Kenny here, and Jim will be moderating. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Jim.
Okay, thanks, David, and welcome everybody to the show. We're going to go over a lot of information today, and hopefully a lot of different areas of investing. Have some notepaper there to try to take some information down. Today we have with us Jake Bernstein, and Jake has been in the business for quite a long time, and he's very well known for his research on many levels, including seasonality and many other factors. His experience ranges from short-term trading, intermediate, and longer-term trading. He's doing a little bit of the more longer-term than the day trading now. Without further ado, Jake, please introduce yourself to the people who aren't aware and a little bit about what you guys are doing over at your firm.
Thanks, Jake. So I've been trading for 52 years and trade everything that moves. I've been on all sides of the equation, day trade, short term, long term, written 45 books. I have a new book that just came out. It's being self-published. It's the 27 lessons I've learned in 52 years of trading. Very good book. You can go to my website if you want to order it. It's a serial book. Comes out every month, two chapters. And as I said, I study everything that moves. I'm a technical trader. I trade what I teach and I teach what I trade. I'm a real trader. So it's not theoretical work. It's actual. And I'm a numbers guy. So everything I look at is numbers. No fundamentals. I've got to see the numbers. The numbers have to make sense. Everything is rule-based. And that's my introduction.
Okay, absolutely. And at the end of the broadcast, you'll be able to make available to people your website and contact information.
Sure.
so they can follow up. All right, well, we have standard questions here on this broadcast, so let's go through them, and then we'll get into, we'll go off the main highway here into some of the different side roads that I think people will be interested in. First off is the stock market. From today's opening on the S&P, we're at 29.67. How do we feel the market will go between now and Friday? 29.67 is our start point. What do you think as far as that's concerned?
Appears to be a Teflon market. Nothing can stick to it. Nothing can make it go down. Even when the news is negative, it seems to turn around and go right back up again. So it's very significant. But the most important question we have to ask is this a trader's market or an investor's market? Clearly, it's a trader's market. The market is very vulnerable seasonally to the downside between now and the end of October. So I'd have to say, if it was not a Teflon market, by which I mean it ignores the bad news and even treats bad news as good news, I'd say we'd be lower on Friday than we are today. But I'd have to say we're going to be higher. And that's
your feeling is seasonally, we should be getting some weakness, but you can't fight the tape, and the momentum seems to be to the upside.
Exactly. You have to be prepared in this kind of a market, especially at this time of the year, that one piece of news that you might think would be slightly negative could turn out to be very negative and give us the big drop that we all hope will happen by the end of the month to give us an opportunity to establish some really good intermediate term long positions to participate in the very predictable year-end rally.
And as far as your confidence level in that, you want to attach a number?
I'll give it an 80%.
Yeah. Just as a little sidebar, the issues going on in Washington, some people are thinking that that is going to possibly soften the position of the Trump administration going into that October 10th meeting. And possibly the bid coming in stocks and the bid coming into soybeans might be reflective of people betting that way. Do you have any feeling on that?
Yeah, you know, the thing that people really should be looking at is, as we mentioned between ourselves before we went on the air, who's doing the buying? The answer is really clear. If you look at the Commitment of Traders report, you will see clearly commercials, The biggest traders in the world who buy for the intermediate to long term, they've been buying soybeans, corn, wheat, soybean oil, soybean meal, you name it, they've been buying it. And it makes sense for them to do it because they can buy the stuff, take delivery, store it, and pay record low interest rates for it. And if at the end of the year they're showing a loss, it's a tax write-off. So it's a beautiful situation for them. And that's one of the reasons that we see the markets being so strong today, because they've been accumulating for a long time.
And they may be counting on something to get resolved, because certainly one thing that the Trump administration would love is to get the words Ukraine off the front page and China deal replacing it.
Well, sure. Sure. Absolutely.
And like I say, that that fever pitch could get higher and higher. So that, that could be very positive for those grains.
Well, you know, let me say one more thing. A lot of farmers have been scared out of their positions. They've harvested a crop. It's been a good crop for many of them. What have they done? They've been scared into hedging their crop, which would be a perfect situation. They hedge at the bottom and then they get screwed all the way up.
Mm-hmm. And the first line in the sand on the soybeans was the $9 level, and that got breached here today. So if 950 and 10 gets reached out, then you're onto something big.
That's right. And the market that people should really be looking at for low risk is soybean oil. Mm-hmm. It's not a very popular market, but it has had a beautiful cyclical pattern for many years. And today, we're in the uptrend. It's been the only market in the complex that's been in an uptrend steadily for the duration. It's a very, very low risk market.
And then the concept there also is you know, rather than putting all your money chasing into stocks that are very near their all-time high, a small percentage rotating into something that's coming off of relatively low levels that may have high potential based on the trade deal and other factors, you know, might not be the worst asset allocation extension that way, you know.
True enough. And furthermore, one more thing, there's some ETFs that can be traded. If you don't want to trade futures, you can trade ETFs that represent or have a typically strong weighting in the agricultural sector, like DBA.
Now, if we're trying to attach some kind of, fundamental technical reasons on the S&P possibly having a rising week this week, is there anything in particular you could discuss?
Well, in my view, it's the fact that we've got so many people looking for a home for their money. With interest rates this low, where are you going to get the yield that you need? There's really very few places you can go except the stock market. So that's the supportive factor.
Yeah. In other words, the demand for stock continues because alternatives are not very attractive.
Exactly.
Yeah. As far as things that I'm just going to throw some things that I've been watching that, see how you feel about them. You know, this 2950 to 3100 area as a general zone, you know, I have always believed ever since we got up near here that this is kind of a sell zone. And so far that's been fairly good because, you know, there's not been a lot of progress through that neighborhood. With regards to another factor that makes me feel a little confident that, it could be tough sledding in the month of October, is that the Russell and the transports, which had got me concerned that we were going to possibly turn the boat around, because, you know, they had pretty good run-ups, transports and the Russell in the last couple of weeks. But then at the end of last week, it really kind of gave up the ship here. And one last thing is the VIX, which I watch very closely. It seems very uncomfortable under 14. And so that's giving me some kind of an idea that October still has jeopardy possibly in front of it, because the VIX unable to stay under 14 could be on its way to 20 or 25. And maybe the transports and the Russell are indicating where the S&P will end up in the next few weeks. What do you think about that?
Very possibly so. And with the seasonal bias to the downside, I would agree with you. What I'm waiting for is an opportunity to get long for the intermediate term on a big sell-off. And there's so many quality stocks we want to look at and be prepared for that eventuality. Because as I said, any negative piece of news could cause the market to collapse very quickly. And people are saying, well, what if there was some positive news? You know, the big traders are going to take advantage of that. The news comes out, the market surges higher, they sell it, and people are surprised and they say, well, this is the news we've been waiting for. What happened? So you got to be really careful in October, very critical month in terms of the market.
Yeah, I was thinking that they were going to try, because obviously they took out the 2940, 2950 level, which obviously cleared all those shorts out. And now I thought the last of the Mohegans above 3030 might get taken out before a decent sized drop. That still could happen here in a short time if something came out and caused a quick rally. But you know, it is a back and forth affair. There's no doubt about that. Do you watch the VIX much on that, or are you not really looking at the VIX too much?
I'm not a big VIX trader. It really doesn't help me that much.
Yeah, I just try to keep an eye on it, and as far as part of a basket of things to keep an eye on.
Right.
With regards to, I think it might be helpful if we kind of went around the horn of investments and maybe got a little bit of your viewpoint on a wide variety of different things that are going on. But before we get into that, what kind of technical indicators do you kind of keep an eye on yourself?
I use seasonality, divergence, commitment of traders, and something I call the moving average channel, which is a moving average consisting of 10 periods of the high, 8 periods of the low. So we don't look at traditional moving average crossovers. We look at that combination. And if anyone's interested, I can send them a video called My 6 Best Timing Triggers. It'll be free of charge, where I discuss each one of the indicators, show how they're used, and how we apply them in terms of timing using a model called setup, trigger, and follow through. So those are the primary ones I look at. I also look at contrary opinion. We do a survey here called the Daily Sentiment, which we've done every day since 1987, of the small trader. And so we have an index of the small trader sentiment on all the futures markets every day. And we find very consistent results using those as a guide for overbought and oversold.
This is, I think, very important information. If anyone is out there, you know, obviously trading their own account or trying to become as informed as possible, I think those things that you're looking at would be a big bonus for them to put into their methodology. Any quick explanation on how your moving average, you know, quantification is different than the simple, you know, 200-day, 50-day, 21-day kind of thing?
Yeah, here's the problem is that traditional moving average crossovers are lagging indicators. So they will only tell you that we've seen a change in trend after the change has happened. Sometimes so long after the change in trend has happened that by the time you're getting in, the market's ready to go the other way. If you take a computer and you put moving average crossovers to the test, like the 50 and the 200-day crossover, the golden cross, the death cross, you find that over a period of long time, their accuracy is about 35%, meaning that you're wrong a very significant percentage of the time. Eventually, they will make money, but the question is staying power. Can you sit through 13 losses in a row? Do you have the capital to withstand that kind of drawdown? And the answer is, for those traditional crossovers, they don't work for the average trader who can't afford to stay in and keep on doing it. The moving average high-low is a very significantly different indicator because we're not looking at crossovers. We're looking at the highs and lows for support and resistance, and we're confirming that with a trigger. So the combination historically works much better than simple crossovers.
So that's a very big key difference and very important to possibly, you know, obviously find out more about and see how it could fit into your situation.
Yeah, right. I described that in the video showing us specific examples.
Yeah, good, good. All right, let's go around the horn here a little bit because you don't really look too much at individual stocks, do you, Jake?
I do not. It's very difficult for me to look at an individual stock and try and pick one stock in a sector because, unfortunately, my intuition about picking one stock in a sector is really bad. So I'd rather trade an ETF or an index. It makes a lot more sense to me, much more predictable.
Now, you do keep a good eye on the S&P 500 index. Is there any other stock indexes that you kind of follow pretty closely?
I look at the Russell. I look at the NASDAQ, but for me, and the Dow, of course. But for me, the primary instrument is the S&P 100. Now, let me say one more thing. I do look at individual stocks technically, and I know a lot about individual stocks. I just don't like to trade them as much as I like to trade the main indices.
Because there have been some stocks that have had some pretty good size run-ups.
Oh, yeah.
And some people were thinking that we might be entering a period of time where protecting those values, maybe even implementing some option tactics like collars or married puts or replacement trades where you take some positions off and replace them with limited risk call options. Do you have a feeling that we could be at a point where that makes any sense, or it's pretty up in the air?
Absolutely do. And one of the things you want to look at is the IPO market, which is starting to really soften up. Basically says people are not willing to chase these stocks at ridiculously high valuation levels, such as WeWorks and things like that. So yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a negative factor, and I look at it very significantly. And I have no problem with these option strategies. I just don't do them myself because primarily I'm a futures trader, other than in my retirement accounts where I'm doing a lot of stocks.
Yeah, and sometimes it's obviously not advised to try to do too many things at one time because it's difficult to do that.
Unless you got people working for you, that's for sure.
One stock that I have noticed has been losing some altitude in the last couple of months is obviously Amazon. And I was thinking that it might be correlated to the valuation, because when we're up at 2050, valuation was over 100 to 1 PE ratio, and now the valuation is down in the 70s. And so the stock actually might be dropping, not because their business is getting worse or anything like that, but the appetite to pay the higher multiple is drying up, because maybe they think there's less rabbits in the bag for these people looking forward.
Yeah, you also have to remember there's a news backdrop that's pretty negative, whether it's Google, Amazon, some of the bigger players, all this stuff about internet privacy, all this stuff about overregulation, monopoly. These things are weighing on the public perception of these stocks as investments. And at some point, if they drop far enough, they will have good values. So that's what I'm looking at too.
Okay. Again, I was going to now go a little bit more into your sandbox, which is the commodity sector. And why don't we start out by talking about those grains, because there's definitely a bid on those today. And again, it could be correlated to the idea that people are thinking that, you know, with this news going so south as a headline, one way to get it off the front page is to get something where everyone would be rejoicing, which would be some type of a trade deal. And October 10th is coming up. So, you know, people do do trading on a discounting mechanism, and they might be discounting something there. Which are your which ones are you most focused on in the grain area?
Well, you know, in terms of stocks versus commodities, one of the best things you can do in stocks is to buy value. To look at stocks that have value, that have come down from lofty levels and come down to levels where they make sense. It's no different in the commodity sector. You want to look at markets that have been down for too long, a market like coffee, sugar, cocoa, the grains. And so what's happened is a lot of people are saying, well, these markets are so cheap. They're too cheap to sell. We take too much risk, too much headline risk to sell these markets, because if there's an agreement, they could be explosive. So rather than take that kind of risk and be a seller, you want to be a buyer. So what's happened is that, as I said before, there's been some huge commercial buying in these markets across the board. And so right now, the market's responding to the upside is simply an indication of the fact that there's been accumulation going on by professional traders. Now the public is finally saying, well, you know what? Maybe it's not a good idea to be short. Maybe it's a good idea to be long. Or maybe we should just get out and cover our shorts and sit back and see what happens with the government and with the China stuff. So there's a lot of factors. In addition to the fact that market sentiment, the small trader has been very negative for a long time. And as we know, the small trader is not always wrong, but when they're in a strong agreement, they tend to predict market bottoms and market tops. And that's basically the technical situation as I see it. There's also been a lot of divergence. In other words, prices going down, momentum going up, which to me indicates accumulation. So the charts are very clear in terms of the technical indicators that we have turned the corner. We've been advising people to be buyers rather than sellers. We've been advising our hedging producer clients not to be short the market and not to hedge their crop. Store it if they possibly can.
Yeah, I'm looking at the chart on soybeans, and one could make a case that we could be on the verge of a 1-2-3 formation, meaning the move from 850 to a little bit over 9. Then you had the 2 move, which took you down to about 880. And now the 3 move started today up 20 cents. If we can clear this 910 area, and there's some news behind it, it's possible that this could be a powerful move to the upside. Huh?
Yeah, and one of the things you want to look at is, if you don't want to do commodities, look at the underlying stocks that have potential based on what's happening in commodities. In other words, a company like Archer Daniels Midland, ADM, or the Andersons, the grain company, ANDE, these companies have the ability to be accumulating grains and beans at low prices, and then slowly to put them out for manufacturing purposes, for processing purposes, and that's how they make their money. So buying low and selling high. In fact, one of the big reasons that Starbucks made the big move that it has is because coffee prices have been dirt cheap for a long time. So they can buy their coffee dirt cheap, take delivery, store it, and then when the price comes up, they can raise their prices on the retail level and say, hey, we've got to raise prices on the retail level because prices are going up. Of course, what they didn't tell you is that they've been buying coffee for the last year and a half because as it's been going down and their cost is lower than ever. So the cost, sugar, coffee, cocoa, all the ingredients they use, even milk especially, have been way down, which is why their profit margins have been so good, because the price at the retail level will rarely go down, even though their costs are going down significantly. Sorry, that was a mouthful.
Yeah. Well, my dad used to work at Nabisco and my brother did as well. And I think Nabisco, because they made cookies and stuff like that, I think they used to actually own the cocoa producers that they were using, because obviously they knew they were going to need the product constantly. And I wonder out loud if Starbucks has actually bought coffee farms or whatever.
I'm sure they have. have.
Yeah, which would make sense because of the fact that obviously they know they're going to need the product. Why not actually own the farm that it's coming out of, right?
Yeah, if you want to get your hands dirty with that business, sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know how it would work, yeah. But on the soybeans, there definitely is a turn going on here today. You were keen on the soybean oil. I understand your reasoning, but the people who have not heard the reasoning, I think it'd be important for you to just expound on the reason why soybean oil, which is a byproduct, obviously, should be something to keep an eye on.
The fundamentals, which I'm really not an expert on, are very clear. When you have a bad bean crop, in other words, the yield of beans is low and the weather is not right, that bean, once it's crushed, will produce less soybean oil than usual. Therefore, if you crush beans, you get less bean oil. And because you get less bean oil, the price goes up if there's no competition through other oil seeds like coconut oil or peanut oil or palm oil and so forth. So the fundamentals are there, but the big picture fundamental is this, the cyclical behavior, and I think it's like 17 years. It's a very long-term picture, and soybean oil goes back many years, and this has been the period of time that the cyclical low was due. I have a chart on it if anybody wants to see it. I can't show that now, of course. But what has happened is, just at that long-term cyclical low, commercials started being net buyers again, just as they were at the last cyclical low, which predicted a very big move up. But the main reason I've been talking about soybean oil is this, for the new person who's started trading or speculating, the risk in trading bean oil is very low. It's the least volatile of all the markets. And so every time the price of soybean oil moves 1 cent, it's $600 in margin profits. It's a very low risk compared to soybeans, which have a much bigger range every day.
Yeah. When you mean the risk, you just mean the leverage. The leverage is less. What the price movements are going to do are unknown, but whatever they do, the leverage is less. And that, yeah, from that standpoint, that's what you mean by a less.
Right. You won't make as much money when you're right, but it's not going to kill you dead when you're wrong.
Well, I tell you, the three amigos, corn, wheat, and soybean, all have a very similar chart pattern, and they all today look like they're trying to head north. Is there a crop report coming up that may have people, obviously trading ahead of it?
There was a crop report, I believe, last week, but I'm not the crop report expert, so I can't really say for sure. People say to me, what do you think about the crop report? I say, what crop report? So I'm not the right person to comment about that. But I do know this. Again, I'll say that at the risk of being redundant, the amount of professional accumulation, by which I mean commercials, people in the business who use this stuff, who grow this stuff, who process this stuff, have been long for a long time. And in wheat, they've been basically buying for the last year and a half, 2 years. Mm. So they've got the luxury of having time on their side. They can continue to buy all the way down, and eventually the market explodes and they're sellers all the way up.
Well, I'll tell you, today's lows are probably a reasonable line in the sand for short-term speculators, because 883 is the low on Novi beans and is trading 905. 371 is the low on the corn. It's trading at 386, and 483 and change is the wheat low, and it's trading at 499. So the train has definitely left the station, and obviously if it goes back and takes out the low, that train obviously has mechanical problems.
And just one more comment. Yeah. If we ask the question, what's the small trader thinking right now? It's very simple. The small trader has been negative for a long time. And even with today's move to the upside, they will probably only be neutral. So they're basically saying, we're not impressed. We don't think prices are going to go higher, which is a key giveaway to the fact that they will likely go higher.
Mm. Yeah. And like you say, the commercials, which, are certainly no guarantee of direction, but it's not a bad thing to have them buying.
No, it's ultimately a good thing from the longer term perspective.
All right, let's swing over to the energy markets, because I think a lot of people got in there going nuts, and then the speculators who thought we were on to the next big move, they're getting all wiped out during this drop. But what I was seeing is I think we're into some neighborhood here between 54 and 56 that has a lot of moving averages converging. And then you've got the double low area at 50. So, although they have wiped out all the short-term buyers, that doesn't mean it's going to collapse either, maybe. What are you seeing on crude?
On crude, the big picture is this. The end of this year has been projected to be a long-term cyclical low. So we've been in a cycle downtrend for a long time. The fact that the market opened $6.50 higher the day after the bombing and couldn't hold those gains was a dead giveaway that this is a bear market and it ain't over yet. And that would hold true in all the markets except for natural gas. Natural gas is the only market that made a confirmed technical low, and that's the one that you want to be in on declines.
Yeah, on the crude, I'm always suspicious looking down the road with Aramco coming to market. that steps might be taken to make the crude look a little bit better as we get closer to that date, so that a $2 trillion potential offering can have some activity on it. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's right.
So, but yeah, if you're looking at the chart, a sustained move above 60 would give you a decent idea that a rise could be in the cards, and a sustained move under 40 would obviously be problematic for the positions. And in the middle here, you know, it is a tough racket.
Correct.
You know? All right, let's talk about something where I have been saying that it's a great market longer term, but in the short run, the 1520, 1580 zone is a sell zone, and being so far away from their moving averages, the risk was certainly legitimate that we could have a drop, and that's in the metals. And we are definitely seeing a bit of a drop here today in the metals. What are you thinking here on the gold and the silver?
We've been bullish on the precious metals for about 3 years now. We've taken all of our profits on the palladium market. We've got out of gold about 3 weeks ago when market sentiment reached 90% bullish.
Right.
It's not over yet. It's going to happen again. But right now, we want to be buying at weekly support. We don't want to trade from the long side. We don't want to trade from the short side on rallies because it ain't over yet on the downside. But when it is, it's going to be big. Gold's way overdue for a big move to the upside. And most of the buying in precious metals have been central bank buying. But central bank buying.
Yeah. Central banks have been very much big buyers of gold. And again, as I was looking at the charts, anywhere between 1450, 1475 would be some initial target, and then 1400 and then 1375 if you get lucky. And again, silver basically following suit. You know, it's down 65 cents here today. The only one that seems fairly stable is one that you had your eye on, I think, about a month ago, and that was in the high-grade copper. What's your feeling on the copper?
This is the time of the year to be looking at copper. Year-end, we tend to go higher. Definitely look at copper. Hold on, I got to clear my throat. We want to look at stocks such as Southern Peru Copper, SCCO, FCX, the copper ETF, COPX, BHP, Rio Tinto, all of them paying reasonably good dividends, especially Southern Peru Copper, which is paying about 5 or 6%. These are the ones to look at from the stock standpoint.
And it seems like the underlying commodity itself, it's above the 250 area. And so if it could clear the $3 area, you might really be on a train that's going somewhere.
One more thing about copper. We had a spike in commercial buying of copper, one of the biggest short-term spikes on the long side that I've ever seen. And to me, that can only mean one thing. It means Chinese buying. So if you're hearing the idea that China's not buying copper anymore, they've got trouble, not true.
No, it makes sense too, because their proliferation to all these different continents, be it Europe or be it Africa or whatever, a lot of it has to do with projects that require copper. And so I wouldn't find it surprising at all that they are going to need the product. And they have historically been a big buyer of the copper, I think, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. They didn't build all those buildings over there with no copper.
That's for sure.
With regards to platinum, you know, that's getting nailed pretty hard today, down 54. It's almost $600 discount to gold again.
Right.
And again, a little bit bewildering how it is so dirt cheap. You think that'll have legs at some point?
I think the platinum is probably the best value in the precious metals at this point in time.
It used to be 10 times rarer than gold. Is it some number like that?
In terms of production numbers, I can't say that because I don't know.
Well, that was years ago.
Yeah, that was years ago. But at the big discount it's trading at relative to gold, I think platinum is the place to be. And we recommended getting out of gold about 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and rolling into platinum, which I think still has great value. So if someone's just getting started, don't be tempted by the silver. Don't be tempted by the gold. But I believe people can be platinum buyers right now as an investment. And I say not as a trade, but as an investment.
The gold to silver ratio is up around 86. So although it's not in the 90s anymore, it's still what one would consider an elevated state historically.
Correct.
So it'll be interesting to see if that ever narrows as things go on. All right. Well, the big thing going on today is the dollar index. And let's see what that's going on. I know it did peak above the 99 area last week, and I don't know if it had a follow through here today or not. I hadn't checked just yet, but what are you seeing on the dollar?
Dollar sentiment is way too high. We're in the 90% range. That doesn't last too long. So be careful in the dollar. When it gets hit, it's going to get hit hard, and it won't probably take another decline in interest rates to do that.
Right. And Powell, we got a jobs report Friday, and Mr. Powell will be talking on Friday, so I don't know if that'll have any indication. But we did almost hit 99.50 on DXY here today, and now it's trading a little bit off of that number. So it'll be interesting to see if they can blow out 99.50 or if that'll be the number that that they have trouble at. Only time will tell. Let's just see. And of course, another big market that people have an interest in is the treasury market. And, we had yields drop down to 140 on the 10-year, snap back towards 2. Now I think they're in the 170 area. How do you feel about the
treasury market? In terms of futures, the bonds and the notes have topped. They should come back to resistance, which is close to the highs as the move, and then back down again.
So that 140 that felt a little panicky on the yield, do you think that 140 yield could hold up as a low point for a while?
I believe so. We could get another 0.25% down before the end of the year. But all in all, I think the market sentiment in currencies versus the dollar is extremely low. I see great value in being long these markets when they turn, and it's just a matter of days, I think, now before that happens.
Yeah, I people are saying, where could there possibly be a bubble out there? I don't see any bubbles out there. And, you know, I've been around the block a couple of times as yourself, and if people cannot see that there's a debt bubble out there, they must have different glasses on, because, you know, the negative yielding debt has gone from $5 trillion to $16 trillion in a year. Mm-hmm. And the corporate debt that's either on the verge of being junk, which is BBB, or junk itself, right, and leverage loans are enormous. And people say that if we're going to go to 1% or 1.8% growth next year, then, you know, leverage can be increased simply because earnings drop, and also the covenants then drop on these bonds. So, you know, they're talking that this Miss Lagarde lady is going to be doing a stimulus package in Europe. If their economy ever turned up, I can't believe 16 trillion people would stay in negative yielding bonds when they could get involved in European equities that are rising.
Well, that's true. And I think part of the problem in Europe is overregulation, which I think we need to take a lesson from them in this country by not overregulating these markets and these businesses. They're ready to sue everybody for everything. Mm.
And they also think that this negative yielding strategy is working. And then I look at Societe Generale and I look at Deutsche Bank. They're two big banks over there, and they're within shouting distance of zero on their common stock. So one is like 6, the other one's like 7, you know, and they can't make any money, you know. So obviously the negative yielding low interest rate situation, that's why I think when they said something at the meeting to Mr. Powell about are we considering going to negative interest rates, he said, you know, not at all. We have other tools like QE, and I think they would do QE well before they would go to negative interest rates, because they can see what it's done to Europe and Japan, which is, you know, not really done much.
Exactly.
With regards to any other markets that you might have on the horizon here, I know you did mention the coffee and sugar. Anything there that might...
Yeah, there is one more, and that's lumber. Unfortunately, not actively traded, but given the cyclical behavior and the fact that lumber is more responsive to commercial trading than anything else available, that market is being accumulated again. Now, it may be due to the weather and all the destruction that we've seen in properties and all the rebuilding that has to be done. But the long-term cycle in real estate doesn't peak until 2021, which means there's one more push left to the upside. And lumber is a very beautiful market, as I said, though, thinly traded, still due to make one more push to the upside. And there's a couple of really good ETFs, WOOD and what's the second one? CUT. So the two ETFs for lumber are CUT and WOOD. And then, of course, there's XHB. The home builders ETF.
Yeah, and then the home builders, I mean, I was reading that 70% almost of 20-year-olds are still living at home. And obviously with 3.5% unemployment and with a situation where, you know, people do like to get their personal freedom at some point, there could be quite a bit of activity. And that's maybe one of the reasons why the home builders, particularly with the entry-level homes, have really, really done well this year.
That's right.
The demographic of all these guys living at home has got to change at some point.
Oh, yeah. And so it ain't over yet. As long as the interest rates remain as low as they are,
yeah,
as long as lumber prices remain low after the big decline that we've seen, there's still a lot of potential there.
Yeah. We're in the 300 and change area on lumber. So it has had a rise already a bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It has. And again, that rise correlated exactly with a new wave of commercial buying.
Mm-hmm. Now, like I say, you do like to look at the commercials, but there have been instances when the commercials were not 100% correct on these things, right?
Well, here's the difference between what commercials do and what most people do.
Right.
They can keep on buying when they're wrong.
Right. And so they have staying power. And I used to know there was a trader back a long time ago, and his whole thing was to pick a market that he thought was of good value and just hold on to it, you know, ad infinitum until it went his way.
There was a guy a long time ago who wrote a book. I think his name was Bob Wiest. Mm-hmm. He wrote a book called You Can't Lose Trading Commodities. And his secret was get a market that's getting down to historic lows, buy it, and keep on rolling the contracts forward year after year after year until you finally make money. Well, for most people, that won't work.
No, but I mean, it is definitely a strategy, and it is definitely that has some merit to it, as long as you do it when prices are down and bottoming out, or if you sell something that's high and then is topping out. But again, then you have to, one of the big things is you can't use much leverage because you need to have the staying power, and the leverage is generally what is the Achilles heel of a lot of trading.
Correct.
Yeah. One last area that we didn't talk about, and I saw this on the news, apparently the swine flu has hit China, and let's hope it stays there. And I thought being a swine is like a flu, but anyway, the swine flu, and ergo, there's been some action in these meats, or really hasn't done much?
Oh yeah, the hogs have come off the bottom dramatically. We've seen some limit moves and increased expanded limits for the first time in a long time. So that's the fundamental. But in terms of the technical, that correlates with the cyclical behavior. And here's the thing that's really interesting to me. Virtually across the board, which I'm going to cover in my 2020 forecast, which will be in, I think, next week or maybe even this weekend, I can't remember. The thing that's happening across the board, as I said before, grains, meats, until recently the metals, some of the agricultural commodities like orange juice futures, cotton futures, they're all showing the same basic pattern. Cheap prices beginning to turn higher after long-term downtrends, and commercial buying with small trader sentiment extremely negative. You put those factors together and you've got the perfect storm.
Yeah, outside looking in, it just seems to me that you had the president talk about ags. He was very uncomfortable because he'd never used that word before, I don't think. But he was at a speech and he said, China is now buying our ag products. But anyway, that is what they're doing. And obviously, if you look at the ag products, which is, you know, including your pork, and soybeans, there definitely seems to be a bid in that market. And the charts that we're going from the upper left corner way down to the lower right corner are now trying to turn the other way. And when you get a chart that's gone from the upper left corner all the way down to the lower right, you know, you have to say to yourself a couple things. Have many people who wanted to sell, sold?
Correct.
How many people that wanted to short, short? How many people that wanted out or out? Well, you know, if it's like the heavy percentage of that, then the only people left are people who might think it's a bargain, right? And then the people that are short obviously would want to get those off, and people that are hedged might take those off. And that's a lot of buying coming into a no seller environment. And that's why you can get a very volatile move the other way when there's a reason to think there's a turn. And like I say, I don't know if I'm just barking up the wrong tree, but using common sense as your guide, the headlines are very, very bad. And the way you get the headlines off is to get something going that people think is more important than the headline. And there's not much more important than that Ukrainian call, except if you wanted to throw something in the ring, would be an economic swing like a China deal.
Yeah, and one more thing, which has never been a factor before. I'm going to say this just one time because I don't like to harp on it. There is so much misinformation, disinformation, fake news across the board, not just in the political sphere, but in the markets as well. If you go to the market, if you go to the internet and you say, teach me how to day trade, you will get 80 million hits, no exaggeration. And it's the same with fundamental news. You know, I'm in a situation where I'm insulated from the fundamental news. I don't listen to it, but I've got farmers and hedge fund managers all over the world calling me every day saying, what do you think about this? And I say, what? I never heard that news before. 10 minutes later, I hear someone from someone else who says the exact opposite. And so what's happening is the amount of fake news is confusing a lot of people who listen to fundamentals. They act on those fundamentals, especially the poor farmers who produce the stuff. Every couple of days, they're hearing something different. Hedge your crop. Don't hedge your crop. It's going to go down. It's going to go up. There's a new disease. There's an old disease. And that kind of stuff creates the kind of polarization and confusion in small traders that really helps make bottom, that helps make bottoms and tops. And so in a way, the news is very helpful to those of us who study technical behavior because we don't pay attention to the news. And if you listen to the news, it will definitely confuse the hell out of you.
Yeah. And these agricultural products, you know, it is interesting to think about the supply and demand dynamic because if the funds, the CTA funds, and if commercials and people that are short, you know, if they really do want to cover their positions and it's combined with the news event, the volatility could be very, very significant because the participation, you know, on the long side is not that tremendous, particularly from the public.
Absolutely. And one more thing I want to point out. So now people love the S&P. You know, I was in Philadelphia a couple of days ago speaking at the Money Show, and the amount of people that are confused about trading is at record levels. And so what's happened is this. People say, hey, I want to day trade the S&P. They try to figure out how to do it. They keep losing money. So now the exchange has realized people are losing money day trading the S&P because they don't know what they're doing. So let's do this. Let's come out with a new contract, a micro S&P. So what's going to happen is people will lose their money a lot slower because there's less risk. And so every time you do something, whether it's the mini currencies or the Forex or the micro S&P, it's all designed to get people into the market to bring liquidity. But that doesn't change the fundamental situation, which is that people are absolutely ignorant. One day they'll believe one thing, the next day they'll believe something else. And this holds true for producers as well. So I'll get a call from one of my producer clients who says, hey, I heard there's very bad bean crop in Iowa, someone that says, yeah, but the bean crop in Minnesota is great. And so you get really confused. And that's the kind of confusion that I look for because I want to see the confusion. I want to see the negativity. And that's what makes me so happy that I'm a technical trader and not interested in fundamentals.
Yeah, I think on another macro thing that I saw is that Vanguard came out with a new commodities type fund.
Right.
And it's supposed to mirror the Bloomberg index.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's not coincidental out of the blue that they are now trying to offer a product in this sector because
right.
maybe they are saying to themselves, you know, this sector has been down and out, the metals, the grains, the meats, the lumbers and everything else, and the softs. And maybe it's a situation where a percentage of an asset allocation would not be terribly exposed to this type of thing.
Exactly. You know, there's a lot of markets to look at in the commodity sector, but the thing that's really nice about it is this. For practically any market in the commodity sector, there's an ETF. You want to trade the grains, you can trade DBA. You want to trade the meats, you can trade COW. You want to trade the metals, there's an SIL, there's SLV, there's GLD, all of these. So there's a lot of ways you can participate without having to risk the leverage, without having to take the chance that people take when they trade commodities, because that leverage, as you know, can work for you or can work against you.
Yeah, and the leverage makes a short-term move problematic, whereas on an ETF, you're in there with a bunch of different money and tactics, et cetera. And I think that's probably why many investors who used to have speculative commodity trading accounts go the ETF route rather than try to slay the dragon on their own.
Right. And one more thing about ETFs. If you're going to trade commodity ETFs, make sure you trade a commodity ETF that's based on the physical commodity, not the futures. Because when you roll over a futures contract, you can lose value because the contract in the future might be a different price, usually is a different price than the one you're tending out of. So trade. So for example, you've got an ETF for copper. Make sure it's physical copper, not futures. You'd be much happier that way.
And that is attributed to the contango, correct?
Exactly, to the contango, to the difference between the prices up front and in the back and in the future. So always make sure it's the physical commodity. That way you know that it's going to move tick for tick, value for value with the underlying futures contract, much better for you.
All right, before we close out, I just was wondering out loud if you could give a little bit of your hunch on how this month of October may unfold. Because, you know, obviously we're kind of smack in the middle of the trading range, 30-30 and 29-40 or whatever. And I'm sure it's every man's guess, any man's guess.
Yeah.
But, I guess here's my concerns or whatever, the things that make me frozen on the whole idea. I still believe, because there's evidence not conflicting, that the 2950 to 3100 area is still a sell zone because there's no evidence to say that it's not.
Yeah.
And the Russell just unable to get above 1600 and the transports, you know, not being able to exceed 11,000 seem to be still saying, and then the VIX, unable to get underneath 14 and stay there, still is indicating to me that that possibility of a decline in October is still on the table.
Oh, but, yeah. Yeah, October is a month during which the market has been vulnerable. But if you look at the statistics, which I like to do because I'm a numbers guy, going all the way back to 1920 in the Dow Jones, the month of October, although it's had a downside tendency, and although most crashes, if not all crashes, have happened in October, it is not statistically predictable in terms of percentage. In other words, if you ask the question, is there anything in October that's happened that's been predictable 70% of the time or more? The answer is no. It's been basically an unpredictable month with a bias to the downside. So we have to distinguish, are we in a trading market or an investing market? Right now, we're in a trading market. If we get that big collapse to support, we'll be back in an investment market.
What would be some of the levels of support that you would be kind of keeping an eye on, basis the S&P?
I'm not looking at numbers for support or resistance. What I'm looking at is sentiment and triggers.
Okay.
So, you know, that level of support could come at any price.
Right.
It just depends on what the technical indicators look like.
Right. In other words, if we got a bearish reading,
yes,
like a VIX above 35, you obviously would be thinking you're in the neighborhood of the low.
Right. And if we made a new high in price without a new high in momentum, that would be a warning sign, which has happened on the intermediate term chart. So again, from the perspective of a short-term trader, I'm selling rallies, I'm buying declines. From the perspective of an intermediate term trader, by which I mean a few months to about a year, you're looking to come down to support, which is about 200 S&P points down from here. Mm-hmm. If you're a long-term investor, it's even lower than that. So again, wait for the opportunity to buy value. For the investor, that hasn't happened yet. For the trader, you're selling resistance, buying support. It's a beautiful trading market. It's been that way for a long time, but that's going to end probably at the end of October. Then into November, December, you enter the most predictable time of the year, and that is to the upside. And there's so many great values that will be presented to us by that time. But right now, we're not there yet.
Yeah, and you definitely have a couple of triggers there. One being that the earnings are going to start coming out. And if FedEx was an indicator rather than an anomaly, then you've got some risk in the earnings reports. And
right.
Then, of course, you've got this meeting on October 10th, which obviously everyone is getting enthusiastic, might go over well. And
right.
Of course, if that comes off the other end as another nothing burger, as they
say, right.
Then the second half of October could be where you get the volatility.
Right. And think about this. Think about all the negative news that we've had. Mm-hmm. News that 5 years ago would have been a panic reaction. The president's being investigated. He's done some bad things. They say he's done some bad things. The bombing of the Saudi Arabian oil tanks and so forth. All these things, the market just barely yawns and goes right back up again. So that's a supporting factor. But people are getting lulled into a false sense of security, saying no matter what happens, the market's going to turn around and go back up. Once that doesn't happen anymore, and we finally do get that decline that sticks, that'll be the time to look at it and say, now I want to be a buyer for the intermediate term. Until then, I want to trade strictly short term because that's the kind of environment we're in right now.
Yeah, the two ways to look at the way it snaps back is either A, it is supportive, or B, it's a complacency trap.
Correct.
And only time will really tell you. Again, and I don't know if these, if the Russell and the transports are just being a distraction to the fact we're going higher, or if they are a warning sign that we're not going higher.
Yeah, remember the position of the
tough,
money.
Tough question, right?
Yeah, it's a tough question. Yeah. And then remember the position of the money manager who's got to produce. If they don't produce yields that are better than what you can get in the bank at 1.5%, they get fired. So they're going to be aggressively looking for opportunities.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of market we're in right now.
They didn't hire them to buy money market?
That's it. They didn't do that. They're not going to get their 2 and 20 off money market.
Off the money market. All right. Well, we're at the top of the hour, Jake, and I think we covered an awful lot of information, and I hope everybody took notes. But the main thing they should do now is get an idea how to get a hold of Jake so he can give you all that technical information he was offering out at no charge, and also create some kind of a conduit that you can have ongoing information as well. So, Jake, another reintroduction of yourself a little bit, and also how everybody can get a hold of you.
They can reach me at jake@trade-futures.com, or they go to my website, jakebernstein.com, find out about my 2020 forecast. If they want to get that free report on the 6 best timing triggers, just send me an email and I'll send it right along to you.
Okay, guys, we're in the fourth quarter now. So obviously looking into next year's forecast and where we might be going next year is not a bad thing to start putting on your radar. Again, I'm Jim Kinney. If you have any questions on what I'm looking at and what I'm thinking, just email me at optionprofessor@gmail.com. That's optionprofessor@gmail.com. Right now, I'm going to turn it back over to David. I want to thank Jake for being here. I think we're all very lucky to hear what he's got to say, and I'm going to hand it right over to David right now.
Thank you, Jim. You've been great.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks, guys. Lots of great info today. So just a quick reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory to get future updates on shows. Also, you can go to timingresearch.com, and the recording of this show will be there as soon as I can get it posted. Plus, you can get access to any of the past reports and shows there as well. Be sure to join us for episode 96 of Analyze Your Trade. That's tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Lance Ippolito will join us for that one, and Jim will be moderating again. So you can get access to that at timingresearch.com/live. And I just want to thank my guests again for today, Jake Bernstein of trade-futures.com and Jim Kenny of optionprofessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Jim.